War Room Impeachment with Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment. It's episode 79, 18 December, year of our Lord, 2019. We're live from the nation's capital, from Capitol Hill, in fact, just yards away from where this dramatic and historical day is going down, the impeachment of the 45th President of the United States. Donald John Trump is underway. I think we're now into the fourth or fifth hour of this. We're live on the John Frederich Radio Network, the Salem Radio Network nationwide. We're on americasvoice.news in the United States and globally. That's a streaming service. And Newsmax TV, the fastest growing cable news operation in the country. 24 February 1868, the impeachment of a President Andrew Johnson. 19 December 1998, the impeachment by the House of William Jefferson Clinton. And 18 December 2019, the impeachment of Donald John Trump. I want to turn to my colleagues. We got a lot. It's very dramatic today. People really brought a game, I thought. I want to start with, we've got Raheem Kassam here from the UK and UKIP fame and Brexit fame, and Jason Miller. Jason, what's your assessment? You've sat through this today. You've watched everything. You've been at this professionally for, 25 years? Tell me what your thoughts are.
I think there were a number of the members who really dug deep and came up with some good material. We're going to see or hear some of these clips coming up shortly, whether it be John Lewis, Jackie Speer. On the Republican side, I thought Louis Gohmert very passionate. We're also going to hear from Barry Loudermilk, who's a friend of the show, who's been on before. It reminded me a lot of what we saw back during the impeachment of Bill Clinton, the solemn nature of the day. I mean, there are political debates, and there's the actual impeachment vote in the House. And so there is this air of it's very serious. People know what's going on here. But it's also, at the same time, it's really disappointing for the country. When you think about this, these speeches that are going on, these flowery, eloquent speeches, trying to remove a duly elected president of the United States who earned the vote of 63 million Americans. And it's this heavy feeling that, you know, how do we go forward in something like this? And it's a realization that the Democrats are never going to stop.
That's the point. If people think this is not the end, this is really a new beginning for them, because now they've officially put the stamp on it. If you think of Andrew Johnson's crime was, you know, it was reversed later, but they just passed specific laws about Reconstruction that he wasn't going to fulfill. And so it was a crime, right? William Jefferson Clinton lied, I guess, in a grand jury, a crime. Richard Nixon, who left before even going to the House vote, for a crime, right? And here it didn't seem like a crime, and yet you had, and that's the contention today, the contention in the Congress all day long, back and forth. And I mean, I think they're really going after each other. The other difference is both the DACA, you know, immigration in, I think, July of 2013, in the Obamacare vote, right, in the fall of 2009, right? Those were the two, I think, biggest and most dramatic you've seen from the House, you know, almost all night, national TV. But they didn't even come close. The only thing that came close to this was the Iraq War, right? And so you think war and impeachment are the two, those are the votes that you'll be remembered for as long as you live, and you got to bring a game. Raheem, I think maybe what we do, let's go to some of what we've done is just take a short curation of a few handful we thought were particularly dramatic or on point.
Wait, hold on. You say we thought were dramatic or on
maybe
point.
Maybe I didn't have a consensus. I didn't have a interagency consensus on that. I got some heckles.
This is as interesting as your legislature gets. Then I think maybe we should march back on Washington.
I'm a big believer in the question time in the parliament, but we don't have that, as you know. In fact, Jason, why don't you tee up people about it is so little really drama in the House or anything like that. Everything is really pretty perfunctory.
Yeah, and look, having been a chief of staff for a congressman from the state of Florida many years ago, the thing I can tell you is about 10% of Capitol Hill actually does anything. And when I say that's whether it be your committee chairs, your folks in leadership, maybe some of the hard chargers.
The staffs themselves, right?
I'm saying like actual members. Right. And so you have about 10% of the members or worth anything. And quite frankly, that's on both sides. And then you have about 90% that just they get whatever the House or Republican or Democrat caucuses with a printout form and say, go to the floor and say this. And so what we're going to play here, these are what we think some of the leaders.
Oh, you mean the guys that say, here's the days, talk. Here's the points. Get up there and make them.
Right. And so today, I mean, look, we heard a lot of things. First of all, and John,
there was a little bit of that from both sides. You can see the points on the left and the right.
Yeah. So for example, the Democrats who, you know, I came here, I'm obviously given my version of it, but I came here to pass prescription drug reform and help the kids, but here's why we're not doing that today. So it's like the very, you know, very generic boilerplate. I did think one theme that was interesting today, you know, it used to be Democrats during the hearings, they'd say it doesn't have to be a crime to be impeachable. But now today, almost every single Democrat hit the line, nobody is above the law.
Yes.
And so they over and over and over, that's what they kept going to. But I don't want to delay
you think that's You think that's tested? They tested that line that it works? That's focus groups.
So many members said it. It was clearly, you know, it was like printed out and like, you know, buttoned on their jacket, you know, and they're going out on a cold wintry day to make sure they didn't forget about it. But let's get to some of these clips.
Not to step on the clips, but I just got a breaking news notification, Steve. I think you might be interested in. It's from Trish Regan. She says, I'm calling bullshit on the Dems tonight. Watch Trish Regan primetime at 8 p.m. for exclusive reaction to D.C. Circus with one of our most brilliant political thinkers of our generation, former special advisor to Real Donald Trump, the War Room 2020's hashtag Steve Bannon. Is that you?
I love when they print the my agent's pitch.
All right, we're going to play some of these clips from the House floor today, starting with Nancy Pelosi talking about the Pledge of Allegiance.
My colleagues, this morning and every morning, when we come together, members rise and pledge allegiance to the flag. Every day, all across America, children in school, members of the military, officials, and those civically engaged also pledge allegiance to the flag. Let us recall what that pledge says. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Not for nothing, but did sound like the teeth were falling out a bit there.
On a day of such solemnity.
Prayerful day,
yes, you're not buying any of it, Jason?
No, and look, Steve, we talk about this all the time, that I'm one of the more cynical folks out there.
One of the more.
Okay.
So that's where you were a perfect comms director for Donald Trump.
Right, I'm pretty cynical on a lot of things. There's always, but here's the thing with Speaker Pelosi. And by the way, there are zero Pinocchios in what Raheem said as well. But going back through the Pledge of Allegiance, something like that, and you stop and reread a line. You know, there are just certain things that I really feel is, it's disrespectful, and it's, you know, like, why are you?
Oh, you think so? You don't think it's just you're trying to make a point and reemphasize why they're trying to do it?
Right, but it's the Pledge of Allegiance. Like, who?
If you don't watch it, I'm going to call our master political strategist again, but
It really doesn't sit well with me to go through. And how do you start pulling the Pledge of Allegiance to try to score political points? And it just, and I think a lot of people out there listening saying, you know what, Speaker Pelosi, you have no right to go and pull in the Pledge of Allegiance and try to use that as some political tool to hit President Trump over the head and to try to throw shade to him. This entire thing's been really unconscionable.
It rubs you the wrong way. Let's go. John Lewis gave a very dramatic half a way through. Let's pull that.
This is John Lewis on the House floor moments ago.
Madam Speaker, I want to thank the gentleman for yielding. Madam Speaker, I rise with a heavy heart to support this resolution. When we came to Washington in 1961 to go on the Freedom Rides, we chose that day. When we came here on August 28, 1963, for the March on Washington, it was joyful. We met with a young president, President John Fitzgerald Kennedy.
When we came here on August 6, 1965, for the signing of the Voting Rights Act, we were excited, hopeful. We met with President Lyndon Johnson, but today, this day, we didn't ask for this. This is a sad day. It is not a day of joy. Our nation is founded on the principle that we do not have kings, we have presidents, and the Constitution is our compass. When you see something that is not right, not just, not fair, you have a moral obligation to say something, to do something. Our children and their children will ask us, what did you do? What did you say? For some, this vote may be hard, but we have a mission and a mandate to be on the right side of history.
A mission and a mandate to be on the right side of history.
That was Congressman John Lewis. He was a colleague of Martin Luther King. Let's go to Congressman Loudermilk.
Steve, can I just go ahead. I know in Washington, when you have a legendary member of Congress like a John Lewis, someone who's had, you know, very just a very historical figure in race relations in the U.S. and someone, like you said, was colleagues with MLK, that people want, there's kind of a default where they give him a lot of respect and they say, this is someone who we really need to revere and listen to. I'm sorry, did President Trump go and kill a bunch of people? Or there's absolutely nothing there. They're talking about this being this pivotal moment in history, and literally not one of these 16 witnesses they brought into Schiff's downstairs speakeasy or that they hauled out in front of these committees had one shred of proof that President Donald J. Trump did a single thing wrong.
Before we go to Loudermilk, so it's very powerful. I want to respond to this. What if you notice what they tried to sell all day long? He's why? Because the Republicans kept hitting them on it's rushed, it's Schiff's thing, the skiff. And they kept coming back to he's a clear and present danger because he's trying to do it now for 2020 into this election. That's what they default on. You don't think it rises to that level? You're not buying.
No, I don't buy it at all because, again, President Trump didn't do anything wrong. And even if they're let's, you know, play devil's advocate here and say that you don't like President Trump and you think that, he must have done something wrong because I voted for Hillary Clinton and she didn't win. There's been nothing proven that President Trump did anything wrong.
Yep.
And so to go and make these allegations that this is, you know, what side of history? Okay, so what's the evidence? You don't have any evidence because there isn't anything. And that's what's rubbing me the wrong way today. So I'm obviously fired up.
This is not dislike of President Trump. This is hatred of Trump. The Trump has triggered the Democratic Party in a very deep way. This is not even about policy. We're going to get to a little bit about policy and some of this, but it's something deeper going on here. The passion he brings up, they must defeat him, right?
Well, you heard it right there. I mean, it's wonderful oratory from
yes.
John Lewis if you're talking about a genocidal maniac, not if you're talking about somebody whose phone call you disagreed with. It was quite melodramatic. But I agree with you, by the way, with what we said before we went live, is that to me, it's not quite the House of Commons. But if you clip these things back to back, as we're doing
here,
powerful. It does make it powerful listening in this way.
I can't watch any debates in the House, and I've been here all day watching it, person after person, as a filmmaker, thinking if you cut these together, it's a very, and you know how to order them, you can have a very compelling, which we're going to do.
Now we know. The impeachment movie is coming.
No. But I think it's a good lesson for the American people. This is for every kid out there, if you want your children to know about civics, this is the American system. Now, I happen to think we've taken political warfare up to another level, right? Impeachment was never intended to do this, right? Impeachment was only for treason or bribery or a high crime and misdemeanor. I don't think they've even come close to proving that, right? And so now, but we are ratcheting up political warfare to a whole different level, right? And it's going to get, and this is the point, it's not going to stop here. This is going to be, and it's not just about, because remember the other day with the Republicans, Rick Wilson, it's not just about Trump, it's about Trumpism. It's Trumpism. It's not, they have a, they, clearly he's triggered some sort of deep personal resentment and personal hatred. And that's one of the reasons going after. But his policies, we're going to get to that in a second about why why they really hate him. Let's try Congressman Loudermilk.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Congressman Loudermilk, who spoke to that earlier on the House floor.
Trump doesn't want people coming here and going on welfare, and you hate him for it. President Trump wants able-bodied people on food stamps to try to work, and he's hated for it. President Trump renegotiated that rip-off trade agreement with Mexico and Canada, and it was let in place by President Bush and President Obama, and you hate him for it. President Trump sides with law enforcement instead of criminals, and murders dropped 1,000 people last year, and you hate him for siding with the police. President Trump lets Christian adoption agencies choose who they want to be parents, and you don't like him for that. President Trump won't let foreign aid go to agencies that perform abortions. You hate him for that. President Trump's judges stick to the Constitution. He's disliked for that. President Trump is keeping his campaign promises, and you hate him for that. I yield the remainder of my time.
That was Grothman. That was Congressman Grothman. Rather than Loudermilk. Yeah. My apologies. Yeah.
Glenn Grothman from Wisconsin.
Yeah, very powerful. We got Jackie Speier.
We do. We have Jackie Speier. Oh, you're testing my abilities to flick around here very quickly. We have Jackie Speier now.
Okay, good.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. My father fled Nazi Germany for America because he saw what happened when a despot became untethered. He fled because he believed in democracy, in the rule of law, and the right to vote. Before he died, he asked to be buried in a simple pine box with an American flag to symbolize his love of this country. Today, we are called upon to do our duty out of love of country. The president stands accused. We must judge him as we judge any of our fellow citizens on the facts and on the law. The facts show that the president's North Star is Russia, not the Constitution. There is no question that President Trump delayed military aid to Ukraine, our ally, as they were under attack by Russia, our adversary. There is no question.
That was the end of the Jackie Speier clip, Democrat from California's 14th District.
The ones that are most impressive from the Democrats is where they came off the talking points and went back to either something with their family, something with the Constitution, then try to bring it back just from, you know, as observing this. And I thought they had some power. Don't get me wrong. I think this whole thing's a sham. But the way they presented today, particularly, I think they feel that an audience that's just coming to this or is going to listen to this or listen to some of these things.
Yeah, I mean, look, you start going down all the boxes to check. I mean, we threw in Nazis, we threw in Russia. Surprise, Congresswoman Speier didn't throw in. I thought we'd get maybe some Attila the Hun. You know, maybe there's, I don't know, do we have some other, you know, atrocious leaders from the past? I mean, you listen to that, and yes, I'm in a little bit of a cynical mood, but it's, okay. I mean, a lot of these are dog whistles to Democrats.
Yes.
I mean, she's not accidentally bringing up Russia. She's
and Hitler. She's not bringing up Hitler in Russia as a coincidence.
You're not going to see those two things brought up, say, in a prescription drug debate.
Yes. Let's go. We have Loudermilk now. That's one talking about a guy that really reached for something that I thought was very powerful.
Before you take this historic vote today, 1 week before Christmas, I want you to keep this in mind. When Jesus was falsely accused of treason, Pontius Pilate gave Jesus the opportunity to face his accusers. During that sham trial, Pontius Pilate afforded more rights to Jesus than the Democrats have afforded this president in this process.
That was bringing it, right? I thought that was powerful.
Yeah, that was, and for many liberals, their heads are exploding now.
There were a number, we'll do it in the summary show when we do it, but there were a number of Republicans, I thought, that went to the New and Old Testament and had some amazing, you know, how they wove the story into their, you know, some of these guys had 90 seconds. It's hard when you get up there and get 90 seconds and you got to deliver, right? Or something that history is going to look at this many decades from now. So I was very impressed. Loudermilk was very powerful. We have time to do Louis?
Yeah, we got 90 seconds of Louis Gohmert. We got some time. Let's play Louis Gohmert.
Turning his back on Ukraine, that happened in 2009. Because in 2008, Ukraine invaded Georgia. What happened? Bush put sanctions on Russia to teach them a lesson. What happened after that? Well, in March of 2009, Hillary Clinton was sent over to Russia with a reset button to say, Bush overreacted. We're okay that you invaded Georgia. It was a green light to Russia to invade Ukraine. And what do? Oh, yeah, you send blankets and MREs. They can eat and be warm while the Russians are killing them. That is what the Obama administration did. This is a travesty. And we're in big trouble because Schumer was right. Now it's lowered even farther, the bar. It will be used for political battles, and this country's end is now inside. I hope I don't live to see it. This is an outrage. I yield back.
Gentleman from New York.
Mr. Speaker, I am deeply concerned that any member of the House would spout Russian propaganda on the floor of the House. I now yield 1 minute to the gentleman from New York, Mr. Higgins.
The gentleman from New York is recognized for... The House will come to order. The gentleman from New York is recognized for 1 minute.
Thank you.
The House will come to order. The House will come to order.
That was about House of Commons as it gets.
That was good. Louis wasn't going to take that. You're saying it's Russia propaganda, Nadler?
He marched for those listening on audio and not watching the video stream on americasvoice.news. We play the video clips as well. And as Nadler gets up there to say Louis Gohmert is spouting Russia propaganda, Gohmert returns to the podium and yells back at Nadler past his times. That was some drama.
The buried lead in that, though, because I know that... Was Louis Gohmert, Judge Gohmert, who I've got tremendous respect for, has been in this building here many, many times, was one of the leaders of the Tea Party movement. His quote, "The end of America, the end of America is in sight," is what we do here today. That is for a guy that thinks as much of this republic, right, has done as much for the state of Texas and done as much for this country as Louis Gohmert, to say that that is what this day emblematic of. Is pretty powerful. Raheem, why don't you tell us how everybody can get up to speed of what's going on. This war on impeachment, we're here 7 days a week. Today is the day that we started the show for. It was to this day and the day that Trump's acquitted. Today's the first big part of the process.
That's right. And you can catch everything we're doing at www.warroom.org, where we're following in graphic detail, looking at all of these clips, all of the news that's being made out there, including very recently the news that Tulsi Gabbard is due to introduce a censure motion. We don't know how she's going to vote yet. She's even going to turn up. It's all at warroom.org.
Okay, we're going to take a short commercial break. We'll return. Raheem Kassam, Jason Miller, Stephen K. Bannon. War Room Impeachment, Episode 79, back in a moment.
War Room Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment, 18 December, Year of Our Lord 2019, Episode 79. We're live from the nation's capital. It is the day that the House of Representatives is going to impeach Donald J. Trump. It'll join 24 February 1868 and 19 December 1998 as the previous days for President Andrew Johnson and President Clinton, now President Trump. We're live on the John Fredericks Radio Network, Salem Broadcasting Radio Network throughout the country, americasvoice.news in both the United States and throughout the world, streaming, and of course, Newsmax TV. Before we get to some other clips we're going to try to pull, I want to turn to Jason. If you're a Trump supporter, he will be impeached at the end of the day, but in your perspective, I think our perspective, there's a lot of good news here, right? Tell me what frame this. What's the good news?
Good news is that the Republican Party is 100% united behind President Trump. And Francis Rooney, the congressman from Florida, came out and said that he will definitely be.
Why were people concerned about Rooney?
Because he had gone on Fox News and basically gave a little kind of one of those little hallway interviews saying that basically showing that he was wobbly and that he was considering the articles of impeachment. This is
previous. And he retired.
Yes. Yeah. And so when you're saying that you're punching out.
He and Peter King were two that were on our list because these are two guys been around a long time, probably not wildly enthusiastic about stepping down. They were, and those would be kind of the guys would be perfect to vote to impeach and then just head out the door, right?
Exactly. But the fact that, look, let's go from all the way the hardest of the hardcore, whether it's a Louis Gohmert or a Matt Gaetz, of course, being no votes, but going even to the Will Hurds, going to the Peter Kings, going to Francis Rooney, who just came out and said that he's a firm no vote. This is pretty historical to literally not lose a single Republican every Trump supporter out there who's listening right now should feel very emboldened that, you know what, we stick together, we're going to win this thing.
And President Trump, unity and substance.
And as we heard from Senator Rand Paul, who's a guest on our show yesterday, he doesn't think we'll have a single defection in the Senate as well, and also thinks that we're probably going to pick off at least a couple of these Democratic senators. So, I mean, just a couple other folks. So we have Peterson and Van Drew, who are Democrats, who are both likely no's.
And Peterson's part of leadership.
He's chairman of the Ag Committee.
And the Ag Committee is a very important committee in the House. He's a player, right, on the Ag Committee. He's part of leadership. And that's a big deal.
That's a big deal. You have Jared Golden from Maine.
If you had a member of leadership voting to impeach, literally CNN would that guy's picture would be up in the corner all day long, right?
Correct. Yeah, but they just want to pretend like it's not happening. Golden is going to be splitting his vote, voting for
Maine
one, not
too.
The other.
Maine too.
And then Tulsi Gabbard, Steve, I know your Google alert was going off. She's
queen of the insults.
It looks like she's probably going to abstain from the votes.
I can't say anything. It may hurt Tulsi in the Democratic primary.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't want to do that. Don't
try to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory here.
Exactly.
But looks like she won't be. And there's still a couple people we haven't heard from. Could be a couple other ticket splitters out there. We'll see.
The other thing has been very powerful today about the rhetoric from the Republicans. You haven't heard any. What he did, you might be right. What he did was not great, not perfect, not good, but it's not impeachable. 100% unity. What he did was correct. The call was correct. The pattern of behavior is correct. This is what the American people hired him to do. I mean, it's very much what we've gone through on this show from what President Trump said and what Tony and Pam Bondi get into the White House to augment the team. It's been the messaging's been consistent, and everybody was consistent about that messaging. What do we have here?
About that messaging, yes. But some went a little off-piste, like Randy Weber. Randy Weber went full-blown... Kind of like your crazy uncle at Thanksgiving.
No, Randy Weber. Randy Weber.
I know you liked it.
I loved it. I love it.
Well, I got the clip. We're gonna play the clip. People can make up their own minds.
Interesting to hear the socialistic left Democrats that have a newfound appreciation for the Constitution and our founders' principles. Would that those same socialists, Madam Speaker, would afford unborn babies the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as well. Madam Speaker, history tells us the first three impeachments in this country, crimes were involved. Johnson violated a law that Congress had just passed over his veto. Nixon was involved in a cover-up from Watergate. Clinton lied to a federal grand jury and instructed Monica Lewinsky to falsify an affidavit. Crimes. All instances of crimes. Now comes the socialistic-leaning D's, in my opinion, Madam Speaker, ostensibly reading the president's mind, knowing what his intent was, and dictating to us and the witnesses that were in the hearings what his mindset was, and that, quite frankly, they didn't believe that he had the right to be in charge of foreign policy. We heard ambassadors, and yes, we heard career bureaucrats, career diplomats, whatever you want to call them. They get to ride the bus. They don't get to drive the bus. The president is in charge of foreign policy. They said that the president had the audacity to use his judgment on foreign policy instead of theirs. Opinions. Suppositions, indeed. The very swamp he is draining is objecting. Who knew? Today, now during the earlier rule debate, comes the floor manager of the other side from Massachusetts, citing not facts, witnesses, but newspaper articles, CNN, USA Opinions, editorials. Unbelievable, Madam Speaker. Americans are watching. The D's are delusional, delirious, and in deep yogurt. I yield back.
Dude, that was class. Hey, listen, don't sit there and give me the thing about the letter and you don't love that. I mean, that's hammer time.
I love the content there, but it was more the intonation that did it for me.
Well listen,
in
one thing.
Deep yogurt?
Yeah, at the end, yes. But let's talk about a couple of things. Number one, he did say, you know, the Democratic Party that we've known is gone. You guys are socialist. Most importantly, and I think particularly if you sit there all day and you've listened to the judiciary, you listen to the Rules Committee, and now you hear the speeches, he said this newfound love of the Constitution and the founders, right, that you have to live up to that level and the Constitution thing, he was right because they've all embraced. They're embracing the republic, the flag. They are making the point we're the patriots, and Trump is not just a disruptor, probably a Russian asset.
Yeah, and it's for the Democratic members of the House. They're, you know, replacing their doorstops, you know, which previously they're using their little pocket constitution for doorstops. Now they're like, oh wait, this.
Oh, they were pulling it out all
day.
Yeah,
they're like, oh, this is the Constitution. But here's the thing that is so great to keep in mind, Steve. With that historic 2016 win, President Trump broke the back of the modern Democratic Party. He fractured their longstanding coalitions and made people really realize, hey, if I'm someone who shows up and works hard every day, has to pay taxes, where do I want to vote? Where do I want to vote with? Who's more closer to how I align my worldview, what I want to see for the country? And what we're seeing here from the Democrats is so many of them are just retreating back to this this supercharged liberal base. And look, Congressman Weber, who I don't know, haven't spent time around, but you know, man, I really liked what he had to say today.
Oh no, he was fantastic.
How long more have we got of this? By the way,
this is going to go to, I think, at least 7 o'clock tonight. I think they got another still hour on each side. We'll ask the War Room, can the guys check? I think it's still an hour. I'm not sure they count the time either about when the managers are talking, because there's been some repartee between Congressman Collins, and now Schiff is taking it over. To run the program, right?
I think it's gonna be like one of Raheem's football.
And they've been
matches.
Going back
when you
and
get
forth.
To the extra time at the end, you're like, not sure exactly how much time is on the clock. But here's what they'll do: they'll strategically string it out so President Trump doesn't have any unencumbered clean air, so to speak, to be able to get his message across at the rally.
So this is going to be, talk to people about the split screen of it, the split screen nature.
Right. So as of right now, they're basically on a collision course for the House of Representatives to vote on the two articles of impeachment during the 7 o'clock hour, but there's a good chance it'll probably be into maybe beginning of the 8 o'clock hour, somewhere right in that range once debate has
But you do
up.
Agree from what we heard yesterday, it's happening tonight in prime time.
Yes, that's every indication. Yesterday we were hearing from multiple reporters, good chance could go to Thursday. Today they're saying Pelosi has the iron fist, is going to ram it through. But President Trump will have his rally going. I wouldn't be surprised if the president had a little bit longer one tonight and maybe start at 7, run that thing out till about 8:30. Now here's the thing.
You know, he's got that thing, the marker. He's making notes the whole time. He's gonna have some. They're gonna be off the glass tonight. Stephen Miller and the guys should understand. This is not gonna be prepared remarks. Okay.
What if he stands up there just as a thing? What if he stands
up?
It's
a thought
there,
exercise.
He's giving a speech and he says, "I've asked somebody to come out and let me know when I've been impeached." And somebody walks up to him and lets him know, and then he announces to the crowd, "They just impeached me."
I think what they ought to do.
I would say
we ought to live stream it into the arena, the vote, and let him do play by play. Let him do color commentary.
But you don't think he has somebody walk up to him while he's at the podium and be like, "Mr. President,
one of those, one of those."
I think that would be
something. It'll be something dramatic.
Yeah,
he's got a sense of the drama of the moment.
But he's a TV guy. This is what he was made to do.
Yes.
They think they're going to beat him in primetime. He's going to own it.
You don't think Jerry Nadler can stand up to the president?
But I'd love it if the president was up there and he busts out the phone and he goes, "Hey, guys, I'm going to go do a tweet. And I want to get your feedback on, should I go after Crazy Nancy or, Adam Schiff? Or should we bring up Crooked Hillary? Who in here wants to hear me bring up Crooked Hillary?" And, you know, let's get some of my crowd feedback.
From the letter and from the tweets this morning and the last one he did, for a couple hours ago before he went to Marine One, he is taking this seriously. I mean, he thinks the process is a sham process. This is, they've been after him from the first day, but he's enough of a student of history to understand this is important.
Absolutely, and that's why you saw the letter have so much substance going through the nullification project, going through this being a foreign policy disagreement, laying out the case against the Bidens and how we can't go and ignore that. There was a lot of substance in there. And Stephen, actually, and Raheem, right now we have Abigail Spanberger from Virginia.
Virginia 7.
Yes.
This is the first of the Dirty 30 is up there?
That I recall seeing. This is the first one.
I think
one.
The War Room has told us this is the first one, so Spanberger is in. We'll hopefully pull in a second what she's got to say. But for the Democrats, she's a profiling courage. She's stepping up, and with the other 31, they're all voting. And even there's another 15 or 16 contested districts. So all 45, it looks right now, 46, except for Van Drew, are going to vote to impeach, at least we currently say.
Spanberger's silk scarf that she was wearing, by the way, was the Constitution of the United States printed on a silk scarf.
Very low key. Very, 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 very low key.
Come on, man.
Mine's paisley.
Listen, I heard the Democrats, George Mason and James Madison today. I mean, they were. This was Founders Day for the Democratic Party.
Yep.
Okay, this only highlights I think, and Jason, you first and then Raheem, the importance of the trial. I mean, the trial's now going to be everything, and I don't think people managing in the Senate understand the psychology of President Trump. This, I think today, he's going to want even more vindication. He's going to want exoneration. He's not going to sit here. He's going to say, he sat here today, and as good as the Republicans did, they were outvoted everything. They ran this process through. They rammed it through, and the Democrats controlled it.
Exactly. And here's something, Stephen, Raheem, that you're not going to see in the wrap-up stories in all the major papers tomorrow, the facts that the Democrats have not put any evidence forward that President Trump did anything wrong. They're not going to go through and say, here are the actual acts of illegality or misappropriation going on with Ukraine, making it one of the most corrupt countries in the entire planet. None of those points are going to be in any of these stories. And no, what name you're not going to hear in any of these wrap-up stories? You're not going to hear anything about the whistleblower or the fact that he needs to be brought forward to testify. This is why it's so critical to have a trial. This is why President Trump deserves to have a full vindication in this entire witch hunt.
I'm refreshing the feed to see what Spanberg has set up there, and I guarantee you this, her silk scarf is about to trend on Twitter. People are going wild for it, her Constitution scarf.
Got a sense of the dramatic. Yeah. It's very smart. I also would tell you, if you look at the how this was structured today, and you think about this in the Senate, which is even more austere and not as explosive and hot as the House, and you see that this, if the Senate's thing is allowing Schiff, because when Schiff got up here and started running things, you see he and Collins had repartee. A little bit of Weber's comments came back to Schiff. Schiff came back and said, I just want you to know, Weber and others, you've been calling them unelected bureaucrats. This is a Bronze Star winner, a Purple Heart winner, you know, 50 years in the toughest assignments. These are patriots, and you guys are calling this. I just don't see President Trump. And now we know that the minimum could be 10 days to 2 weeks. I just don't see him sitting there and seeing a process of today to have Adam Schiff with that smirk doing a, if you look at what the Democrats said today, and you're going to do a curated thing of what Raheem's curated for the on the 7,000 pages of testimony, take out, curate all the hate, string it together and wrap it in the Constitution, wrap it in the founders, you know, wrap it in the patriotism and the flag waving and the Declaration of Independence, the Pledge of Allegiance. I just don't see President Trump sitting there for 5 days before you get to his defense and taking that. It's just not going to happen, right? He's going to say, okay, where are our witnesses? So anything here, I think people have to think this through. This trial, and if the skinny one, they're telling us last 2 weeks, and the longer one could last 2 or 3 months, where do you think this comes out, Jason?
I think probably somewhere in between, but I think that we're definitely going to end up having some witnesses. I just don't see a scenario where we don't. And here's the other thing, too. We could literally have we could have all 100 senators come out and say, we want this skinnier trial.
And
we want it over. President Trump is going to say, I need to be cleared on this.
Right.
It's not because otherwise if we allow,
I don't want to just be acquitted. I need exoneration. I need vindication.
Then we're going to see some.
I believe we may be able to play Alison Spanberger if you want to try.
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm going to try.
Recognize the gentlelady from Virginia, Ms. Spanberger, for 1 minute.
Gentlelady is recognized for 1 minute. Thank you, Madam Speaker. I rise today in support of House Resolution 755. As a CIA case officer, I used to meet with foreign nationals who were providing vital intelligence to help inform our hardest national security decisions and keep our country safe. These individuals from countries where leaders abused their power and defied the rule of law risked imprisonment and often their very lives in order to provide the United States with information to help us, to inform us. But why? It was their belief in the United States, their belief in our country, the longest standing democracy in the world, our country, a beacon of hope in the world, a democratic republic founded on a document and the belief in the rule of law and a belief in its people. Today, I am proud to serve in the People's House representing my hometown and again serving our country, that beacon of hope in the world. And today, especially today, I reflect on the founding documents that have set us apart in the world, leading people across generations and across the world to risk everything because of their belief in our great nation. Today, especially today, I affirm my commitment to upholding and protecting the Constitution, the rule of law it defines, and the people it governs.
Gentlemen from Georgia.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I yield 35 seconds to the...
That's Alison Spanberger moments ago on the House floor.
So Virginia 7, in the where the John Frederick's Radio Network emanates out of, covers all the Commonwealth of Virginia, but out of Richmond, my hometown. Pretty dramatic speech. Calls back her service to the country and the CIA, connects it to foreign dictatorships. But she still didn't say anything about any evidence. It's about the overall thematically, but it doesn't get down to why this right. is a high crime and misdemeanor. Why do you have to impeach him now? Why is he a clear and present danger?
Yeah, that's right. Pretty brave, given her constituents and what you know how they feel about this, right, Jason?
Yeah, absolutely. And like we started off the show, Stephen Raheem, how he said Democrats are using the nobody is above the law. And what we heard from Congresswoman Spanberger is talking about the rule of law. And really, I mean, and as someone who's a former CIA caseworker, she should know that the law is very important. Now, it might not be if you're trying to get a FISA warrant on Carter Page. That is actually the FBI. But, you know, so certain administrative state folks have no regard to that. But the rule of law is very important. And the fact of the matter is President Trump has not had one single piece of evidence shoved in his face saying he did anything wrong.
Where do you think, for people now, the next couple hours we're vote, it's almost 6 o'clock here on Capitol Hill. They're probably going to go.
Entering the ninth hour, I guess, now?
Ninth hour. They're probably going to go at least, I think, for another hour. They'll be into the 7 o'clock hour before they. And you believe that Nancy Pelosi will be jockeying the time here to make sure that she's doesn't let the president have the last word?
I think so, or at least try to make sure that she capitalizes on as much of it as possible. Make sure that we're definitely getting through. Make sure reporters are focused on what folks in the House are doing before they pay attention.
The mainstream media, Raheem, is today they don't. One thing the Democrats are trying not to do is spike the football. What they're trying to do is not do the end zone dance. They're trying to have this thing of solemnity and with a heavy heart and. This is more in sadness than in anger, right?
Yeah, not with a bang, but with a whimper. And it is coming across that way. Like you said at the beginning, it may not have made for much watching it all, you know, in live action, but clipping these things together, as is going to be done for the
next powerful.
Several days, you're going to see the supercuts of this stuff. It is powerful. It makes for powerful viewing. They're gonna clip the most serious and, as Nancy Pelosi would say, prayerful of the Democrats, and they're going to juxtapose them with perhaps the more ostentatious, flamboyant, a little bit out there maybe, presentations by the Republicans and say, look, here's one side taking this very seriously, and here's the other side who not only are not taking it seriously in the House, but are going to try and throw it out of the Senate when it gets there.
Do you think it was a mistake, or is it strategically smart to say that for Mitch McConnell and others to say, I'm already biased. I'm not, this is a political thing. I'm not an impartial juror. Will the Democrats try to use them? Because they're trying to say today it's the rule of law, impartiality. It's a heavy heart. It forces me to do this because of the president's conduct.
I think we need to get even more aggressive on that. That's why I like what Senator Braun did with his op-ed that was in Fox News or FoxNews.com when he called out the five Democratic senators all running for president. How can a Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, people who have literally on a daily basis say the most horrible things about President Trump, not try to be impartial jurors?
Okay, real quickly, go ahead, Raheem.
Can I just ask,
sure.
Why would you say that? Why on earth would you say that? The Democrats have lost the ground on that because their candidates for president are going to be sitting in that trial. You have the high ground. You're able to say our whole team is going to go as there is impartial jurors, not candidates against the person they're trying to impeach. And Mitch McConnell goes out there going, and Lindsey Graham, I'm not an impartial juror.
Well, I think they're doing that because they're saying we're not a jury. We don't need a long trial. It's not a trial. We don't need evidence. Let's get this thing over with. Okay, got about a minute left. Summary, how do you think it's played overnight by the mainstream media? We're going to be here at 9 o'clock tomorrow live like we are every day, 7 days a week until the day after President Trump's acquitted in the Senate. How do you think the mainstream media plays it tonight?
I think when Trump Nation wakes up tomorrow, whether you're seeing the papers and see on the Today Show and other things, it'll effectively be that the Trump presidency is over. Pack up your bags. You're heading home. This thing is done deal. What people should know is that's far from being the case.
How big is the font in the New York Times impeached?
They probably have new printers. They're allowing them to get even bigger. Maybe they do a special double edition just to do the headline.
If you're a Trump follower, just remember you got to get through tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
There's sunlit uplands you know, if you just keep marching forward. But tomorrow morning may be a tough one.
And Don Lemon shed some crocodile tears over the letter, the six-page letter yesterday. You can bet he'll be shedding crocodile tears about the state of the nation tonight.
Yeah, Don Lemon, that was a new low for Don Lemon. It's tough to get new lows. Okay, real quickly, Raheem, how do people get information overnight?
Warroom.org. We'll be following this all night long, way into the night and early morning here from the War Room.
I'll be on Trish Regan tonight on Fox, a business at the 8 o'clock hour from the Capitol. Stephen K. Bannon, War Room, impeachment. It was I Day, one of the most important days in American political history. We'll see you tomorrow at 9.